From the land grant university in Urbana, Champaign, Illinois, this is the closing market report. It is the 27th day of April 2023. It's the first day of our spring pledge drive. I hope you'll dial this number right now, 217-244-9455. That's 217-244-9455. Or go online at willpledge.org to make your financial support to the programming that comes to you from Illinois Public Media. Today, we'll talk with Matt Bennett at agmarket.net. The folks at the NCGA, the National Corn Growers Association, will be here to discuss the farm bill and trade, and then we'll close out our time together by taking a look at the weather forecast with Mike Tenorum on this Thursday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Well, May corn for the day settled at 627. It was down 14.5 cents. July 19.5 lower at 581.5, and December at 530.75 down 12.75. May beans at 1426.75, 9.25 lower. July down 11 at 1403.75, and November at 1255.5 for the new crop, 11.25 lower. Bean meal unchanged on the day. The bean oil down $1.30. Soft red winter wheat in the July 12.75 lower at 629.25. The hard red at 765.25, down 18 cents. Do dial that number, 217-244-9455. Don't wait, do it right now. 217-BIG-WILL. I'll give it to you one more time before we talk to Matt Bennett. Live cattle, 62.5 higher for the day. Feeders also up 62.5, and lean hogs down 17.5 cents. The number to call, 217-244-9455, or willpledge.org, with your donation in support of the ag programming that comes to you from Illinois Public Media. Don't wait. Do it right now. Matt Bennett from agmarket.net now joins us. Thank you, Matt, for taking time with us today. Tell me about the marketplace this week.
Well, today was not a good day. I can tell you that right now. It was pretty rough, actually. We came in on the overnight session, a little bit of a bounce, you know, and then basically what we saw was July corn break that $6 level in the overnight market, and it was all downhill from there. So, closing, you know, 19 to 20 cents lower on July. May corn down 13. So, you know, the spread is still intact, if you will. But, you know, the July, September certainly doesn't look the greatest. It's down to 50 cents, you know, and that spread was trading you know, over in that 70 range there for a while. So, you know, I think a lot of spread unwinding, a lot of, bearish sentiment, if you will, I think based on two different things, based on much cheaper supplies on both corn and beans out of Brazil, first of all, and second of all, you know, a really good window for planting for a lot of folks in the Corn Belt.
It didn't help that the Chinese managed to cancel again today.
Oh, man, yeah, it's a tough one. You know, a lot of folks, whenever the first cancellation came in, you know, a lot of thoughts were, well, they're just canceling in order to, you know, to buy something cheaper. But the problem with that mentality is, you know, if Brazil's, you know, at times running 70 to 80 cents cheaper, you know, than what we are, you know, it's pretty tough. It's pretty tough to assume that they're just going to step in there and buy. And so, you know, bottom line is that as long as their supplies are cheaper, there's going to be people stepping in and selling for sure.
On the corn in particular, and maybe beans as well, that second crop corn will come in June, July from Brazil. We've got some time for weather market there to coincide potentially with the weather market here. For new crop sales in the United States, what should farmers do as they put this crop in the ground? And I'm going to work from the idea that they really aren't very far along on their sales.
You know, if they haven't done a whole lot on their sales yet, I guess my thought is still that, you know, you have to stop and ask yourself, what would you do on a further move lower? So a lot of this depends on your crop insurance program. You know, if you got to remember, you know, 591 is that crop insurance price. But depending on the percentage, you know, you're probably not overly protected just yet. So, you know, where's your break-even type price? You know, what kind of a move can you stomach? So we've been telling folks all along to have a flexible strategy where they've got a floor in place. but yet they can participate in an upward market. I know that puts are extremely expensive, especially whenever you see a move lower like we've just witnessed here over the last few days. But at the same time, you know, I know a lot of folks are looking right now at some of these strategies saying, you know, if I had to sell some corn at $6 or $5.90 even, you know, they wouldn't be super upset. So you got to get creative, and you got to have a flexible type strategy. And I would at least protect some of those uninsured bushels.
Anything for soybean?
Very similar type of mindset. You know, you look at soybeans, I mean, and, you know, essentially November beans, I mean, just last week, you know, on the 18th, we traded up to 13.25, you know, and right now, you know, you're about 70 cents below that. So it's just been a tough row to hoe here. 12.56, though, let's face it, a lot of years is looks like a phenomenal price, basis support, of course. You know, but at the same time, I do understand everything's more expensive to put in the ground. It's just, what can you stomach whenever it comes to these prices? And if you can't take another dollar lower in beans, you know, there's nothing wrong with going ahead and selling. Now, if you want to HTA maybe some beans or corn for that matter, there's nothing wrong with doing that. You might step in if we continue lower, or even if we don't, buy a call before you get into summer weather. Maybe you can participate in some upside as well.
Hey, thanks much.
Oh, absolutely. Thank you.
That is Matt Bennett. He is with AgMarket.net. Hey, this is the first day of our spring pledge drive. I hope that you take time, just a moment, to dial in at 217-244-9455 or go online at willpledge.org to make a donation in support of agriculture. Don't wait. Do it right now. We bring you as much information as we can, as fast as we can, as relative as we can make it to you each and every day. If it's important to your business decisions, dial in now, 217-244-9455. That's 217-BIG-WILL, or go online at willpledge.org. I like the $160 level this year. More is great, less is fantastic. Whatever you can afford, we do appreciate it, and thank you. You know, last week I was in Washington, D.C. with the NAFB, and I managed to catch up with the folks at the NCGA, the National Corn Growers Association. We talked with Wayne Stoskov about the corn growers' farm bill priorities.
Well, NCGA is looking at protecting crop insurance first and foremost, a program that works well and is heavily utilized, unfortunately, because we have so many disasters across the country at different points. We want to make sure that that remains the cornerstone of the farm safety net. We're also looking at strengthening the commodity programs, the agriculture risk coverage and the price loss coverage programs, both of those Title I commodity programs, and looking to support the voluntary conservation programs, particularly the working lands programs, and finally looking to increase the investment opportunities that we have through the foreign market development and market access programs that help bolster our foreign market demand for U.S. products.
It is a menu of items already that have been available. Is it a tough run to get this through Congress?
We'll see. Right now, we're still working to educate a lot of members just about the importance of the Farm Bill and the specific programs. We're excited to have, in the next couple of weeks, opportunities for growers to testify in front of Congress on specific recommendations and changes and to really build that case. And we'll see a little bit more of how receptive Congress is to our ideas and how quickly they can just put a bill together that really looks at our current needs and future needs.
I'm interested. What do you tell Congress people that are unaware of how these work or what they do for the country? What kinds of things are you saying to them?
We really try to meet them where they're at and ask about their knowledge about the programs so we can start big picture and just talk about who USDA agencies are and how RMA and your crop insurance agents work together in a public-private partnership. Or we can go really deep and talk about specific policies where there are changes for the last couple of years, like the enhanced coverage option in crop insurance or the split nitrogen product that NCGA and the Illinois corn growers have worked to deliver through FCIC board kind of approval processes. So we've got to first understand where they're at. What type of information do they need to better understand the farm economy and the farm safety net?
I'm from an urban district. Really, I'm concerned about the food and feeding programs, or I'm from a rural district, and I'm concerned about the food and feeding programs, rather than these USDA programs for farmers who seem to have big tractors and big combines. What do you tell them?
Sure. We've got to start with where the challenges have been. You know, the weather is certainly something that everybody from an urban area or a rural area understands that there are challenges when you face a hurricane or a drought or large snowfall at the wrong time and kind of planting decisions. So you walk through some of the existing challenges. Another one that's been a hot topic is inflation and just how higher input costs relate back to the farm, and really try to incorporate learning opportunities into how all of those big ticket items that they hear about, weather, climate, conservation needs, into the mix of how growers are looking at risk management decisions and how they face these challenges, and sometimes need a little bit of additional safety net support for when things are outside of their control. You've got to make that appeal to them on the human level.
Do you talk to them about the food dollar as well and what people spend on food in the United States?
Absolutely. We talk about how the Farm Bill helps keep an affordable and abundant food supply here in the U.S. After the events, ongoing events with Ukraine and Russia, that is often at the forefront of a conversation of knowing that we need to have domestic food supplies, domestic supply chains, and the transportation and human infrastructure that goes into a very complex system. And a lot of it starts back on the farm with farmers putting a seed in the ground each year.
Thank you very much, Wayne.
Thank you.
Wayne Stoskoff is with the National Corn Growers Association. We're here in D.C. with the National Association of Farm Broadcasting at Washington Watch, joined by Angus Kelly. He's with the National Corn Growers Association and covers trade. One of the things that we have been talking about a lot on the air with the brokers and those who are interested in the marketplace is whether or not Brazil can become the number one exporter of corn and how soon that will take place. I know you have got to be, I don't know about concern, but watching this closely as it's related to trade.
I'll put it this way, Todd. I think there might be enough room for both of us in China. In other words, China has such a vociferous appetite for their hogs that they're buying so much corn and stockpiling so much that China could also rely on, you know, yes, Brazil's getting more of a foothold in China, but I think they still need U.S. corn as well. So maybe I'm too nonchalant about it. What I'm more concerned about is geostrategically, to use a big word, if there's an incursion in the China Sea, or if there's a, quote, to put it in Chinese terms, quote, reunification with Taiwan, if Hong Kong was any historical lesson, that's what I'm concerned about. And then the West does sanctions and we lose market access. But coming back to Brazil, yes, Brazil, especially under their new regime, the new government, the Lula administration, sent reportedly 200 government officials to Beijing within recent weeks to make deals with China. But China's buying so much corn and continued by our buying U.S. corn that I think we'll be okay.
Polish farmers in particular, corn farmers, have not been happy as corn has come by rail across their national lines from Ukraine. How much of a trade issue is that for the U.S. as it's related to Western Europe, if any at all?
I would say this. The three largest producers of corn are, of course, U.S., Brazil, and Argentina. Okay, we produce 50% of the world's corn. Now, we also export 80% of the world's corn. Before Ukraine, when Ukraine was exporting, our three countries combined produced about 72%. Now we're up to being responsible for controlling 80% of the world's exportable corn. So you put that together, and I think we're negotiating from a position of strength. I don't know that Poland, yes, there's a corn production in Poland. I don't know that Poland is a major player in the corn market.
When you look forward on trade, obviously you see China as a big player, a lot of concerns there. What other places across the planet do you see as potential trade issues or trade wins?
Well, you can't talk about corn exports since about 90%+ of our corn is genetically modified. You can't talk about corn exports without talking about Mexico. So that's got to be fixed. Our position remains the same. I know the governments are talking, Canada, U.S., Mexico. I know that Canada is well aligned with the U.S. on challenging Mexico on their GM corn ban, particularly with white corn. But beyond North America, I'd throw India into the mix and a number of Southeast Asian countries we have tremendous potential in. I'm concerned, as they say, in a understated way, we are deeply concerned about China taking away the punch bowl eventually, or it being taken away for us. And we've got to diversify our export market. And so with China, well, certainly with Mexico hanging in the balance, and then a big question mark around China, who's been, frankly, a great customer, we've got to find new market access elsewhere. And we have to do that. Typically, you do that through tariff deals, and our government has not seen fit to do that. So we're trying to do private sector to government deals around the world through the Grains Council.
Let's continue to talk about China just a little bit. The Taiwan issue, reunification, one country. If China were to try to take Taiwan back in, I can see the short-term impact. But trade, food trade in particular, generally gets resolved fairly quickly. Are you concerned it would be much longer term?
What we're telling Capitol Hill, the committees of trade, so Ways and Means Committee and Senate Finance, is as you try to disentangle the United States economically from China and make our supply chains, quote, more resilient, try not to break China. And it's not good for the Chinese population. And of course, it's not good for our growers as well. So Premier Xi Jinping in Beijing has, he has a history of usually going through with their five-year plan. And so I would take his grand designs in the Pacific seriously, and I would do some, and I would be prepared for needing to have other markets to sell corn to, is the bottom line.
That's Angus Kelly. I talked with he and Wayne Stoskov, both of the National Corn Growers Association, last week in Washington, D.C. Have you dialed yet in at 217-244-9455 with that pledge of support or willpledge.org? I hope so, and thank you. Let's check the weather forecast on this Thursday now with Mike Tenori. He's at T-Storm Weather. Find him online at tstorm.net. Hi, Mike. Thanks for being with us. It's been cool for the last couple of weeks, though I think April's still warm for average when you put it over the month. It's just that it slowed down a lot. What can you tell me about the rest of this week and next week?
Well, the cool period that we're in is going to linger for a little while. It won't be nearly as cool over the next few days as it has been, but it will get a lot cooler on Sunday, Monday, and Tuesday. We have a fairly large system that'll move across the Great Lakes, and that will dump chilly air pretty far to the south early next week. We'll even see a few frosts and freezes in different areas of the Corn Belt and stretching up into the Northern Plains. But then once we get beyond that, more than likely we're going to break out of this period, and that will allow things to warm up and move more toward normal. And normal highs today should be around 65 to 70. So it will feel quite a bit warmer. But before we get there, we have a few more days where we're in the 40s and 50s for highs with lows in the 30s. So it's just going to be a little bit longer before we get out of this.
Is there rainfall with these cool temperatures that will remain with us?
Well, there will be, especially to the south and east of Illinois. We'll see some showers in all of the Corn Belt, but we won't be seeing heavy rainfall with this setup. All that said, a couple of pockets of rain are going to form as they move into this cooler period coming up, with the best overall chances for more than a half of an inch across Michigan and Wisconsin, as well as Indiana and Ohio, and then points onto the south. Illinois will be kind of on the edge of this whole thing, with better rain chances in the eastern parts of the state than the west. But this is not a major rain event for this time of the year, maybe more of a nuisance for everybody who wants to get back out there.
Next week, farmers who have been holding off at least planting corn, I think they've probably been in the field putting soybeans in the ground, will really want to move regardless of what's happening. Will temperatures improve by the week's end?
Well, they certainly will once we get beyond the first half of next week. We'll see highs in the 60s and 70s once again, maybe even topping out around 80 once or twice. And this is all because of a pattern we call an omega block. It's essentially where the jet stream forms like the Greek letter omega. And the reason that happens is because a big high forms right in the central United States. These highs are typically associated with dry weather. So once we get beyond these showers we already talked about, will be fairly dry for 5 to 7 days. After that, it's hard to say how this will all pan out, but the omega block will more than likely break down. That will allow some rain chances to form, but it still doesn't look very wet. So we don't think we're going to have a major problem with wetness. And it also should stay warmer because once that omega block breaks down, it'll just allow some of the milder air to the south to shift to the north. So in the end, Todd, this isn't the best weather pattern for planting where we have really warm and really dry weather, but it's also not the worst where we have lots of rain and cool spells. We're going to break out of it. We'll see some rain here and there, but it will turn a lot milder once we get beyond about Tuesday.
Is this the transition from, you know, the omega block to something else, or does that come later, or what kinds of things do you see in the weather patterns?
Well, that's a great question. The omega block has not been part of the U.S. weather pattern for a long time. We haven't seen this in probably 6 months, if not maybe over a year ago. Just it's not a very common pattern. We haven't seen it form. It's only briefly going to be here the way it looks now, maybe for a week or so. You know, sometimes these patterns can last for up to 2 weeks, but it's very difficult to say because computer model algorithms just don't have the ability to analyze and then project forward because it's such a complex setup for the atmosphere. So there's some uncertainty with how long this will last. But as far as what it means for anything beyond a week or two, it's not really related to that. Just because we see an omega block in late April or May doesn't mean that something else is going to happen later. All these weather patterns are kind of independent of each other. And whether or not we'll see more of these later on in the summer or this is just a one-off thing remains to be seen. But like we said, not the best weather pattern, but it's also not the worst weather pattern, at least for the next couple of weeks.
Hey, thanks much.
Yep, great being here.
That's Mike Tenuri. He's at T-Storm Weather. Find him online at tstorm.net. By the way, you can find Mike and the four other meteorologists that we have on our programs regularly, a different one each day of the week, the five best meteorologists for agriculture, I believe, on the planet. And you can listen to them right here every week, every business day of the year. If that makes a difference for you in your business, how about you dial this number right now, 217-244-9455, or go online to willag.org and hit the donation button at the top of the page and help to fund the programming that supports you. I like the $160, let's change it just a bit this year, $160 level. $120 is great, $180, $40, more than that is better. Whatever you can afford. We like it at 217-244-9455. We work hard. We have great weather forecasters for you, fantastic analysts of the marketplace, and we bring you all kinds of information. We hope that it's valuable to you. If it is, dial right now at 217-244-9455 with your pledge of support, or go online at willpledge.org. Either way, make sure that you let them know you're pledging in support of agriculture. The Closing Market Report is a production of Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world. Online for us at willag.org or that pledge line at willpledge.org. Our theme music for the day is written, performed, and produced by Logan County, Illinois farmer Tim Gleason. You have a great afternoon. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Thank you.